It's On Second Thought. I'm Adam Ragusea in for Celeste Headlee. Tomorrow, we look into the science behind falling asleep. And we want to include you in that conversation. What are some of the things that keep you up at night? Give us a call. Leave a message. We're at 404-500-9457. And be sure to join us tomorrow at 9 a.m. for more. Money certainly keeps a lot of people up at night, or perhaps more accurately, a lack thereof. The less money you have, the more you think about money, and the more carefully you spend it. That's one finding in Rachel Schneider's new book, The Financial Diaries, How American Families Cope in a World of Uncertainty. The book follows the lives of lower and middle income households as they try to manage their money. And she is speaking at Savannah's Armstrong Center next Thursday, October 12th. Welcome, Rachel.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Glad to have you. And also joining us is Atlanta financial advisor Cecily Welch. Hi, Cecily.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. So, Rachel Schneider, tell us about the rather ambitious research project that went into this book.
Sure. And it is ambitious. So what we did is we had 10 field researchers scattered across the country in four different locations, and each field researcher worked with 20 to 30 families, and they met with those families every few weeks and gathered details about every single dollar that came in and out of the family's home. So it was a remarkable investment by the families themselves to share so much of their time and so much of their information.
And what are your top line findings?
So the biggest thing that we see is really how volatile people's finances are from week to week, right? So what's different about our data set, and you know, there's a ton of financial data collected in the U.S., but what's unusual about what we were able to do is seeing how money moves through a family's life over time, right? Because we had information over a full year. And what we saw was incredible ups and downs, big, big swings. Even for people who work full-time, they nonetheless don't have real certainty about how much money they're going to make from paycheck to paycheck. And then, of course, spending is spiky, too. So people spend a lot of time and energy kind of trying to manage those ups and downs in income relative to their ups and downs in spending, which, of course, don't necessarily align really neatly.
And what's the rough income bracket that you're looking at in this data set?
So we were, it was all, you could think of it as a lower middle income. So people from about a quarter of the sample was near the poverty line, about a quarter was middle class, the rest were in between. But everybody in our sample had somebody in the family who was working. So this wasn't a story of, you know, what it's like to sort of, you know, inch by off, you know, off of public assistance. This was a story of people who have work. And for the most case, because that work was either hourly or relied on tips and commissions, that work didn't deliver steadiness.
Cecily Welch, as a financial advisor in Atlanta, are the findings of Rachel Schneider's research surprising to you, or is this consistent with what you see?
It's not surprising at all. I'm excited about this book. I'm excited that there is data out there about these individuals. I'm hoping that it will help. These individual conversations will help start a discussion about the systemic and societal issues. Everyone likes to think that, oh, these individuals aren't doing something right. I'm often in meetings in the various committees I'm with, and I'm just shocked at some of the myths that are still out there about people. Well, they don't really know how to budget. It's insulting to tell a working poor person how to budget. They budget well better than anyone I've seen, any of my paying clients. I assure you, they know where every dollar is going because they have to.
Sure. Well, if I look at my own household expenses, you know, my wife and I have been doing better in recent years and sort of gotten to the point where we don't have to think about money that much. We just sort of live a reasonably modest lifestyle and can just sort of be confident that there's going to be enough money in the account to cover the debits that we do. And to me, I sort of felt like making money, the kind of the point of it was that I wouldn't have to think about money. I don't want to worry about it. But the other night, she sort of says to me, you know, maybe we should like go back to budgeting every dollar because I feel like we fritter away a whole lot. Cecily, do you think that's good advice?
I do. I think it's prudent for people to know where their money is going and to spend it with intent. What I mean by that is there's nothing wrong with spending money. I have an issue with wasting money.
Yeah.
So, I think it's valuable to know, hey, we are a foodie family. That's what we're going to spend our money on. then that means we don't do quite as much in vacations. We don't do the fancy cars, or it's the other way around. We are going to make sure we travel. Then if we're traveling, we don't do some of the other. So just being prudent and choosing where your money goes, I think, is something that everyone who has the ability should do, even if it's not tracking dollar for dollar. I do think that there is something that you want to do of the comfort level of we now don't have to track every dollar, which is nice. That adds a different stress level. But we know where our money is going and with intent. And as Rachel points out in the book, there's a substantial portion of the population that does not have that luxury.
Certainly. Rachel, in your book, The Financial Diaries, How American Families Cope in the World of Uncertainty, what did you hear from the people that you and your researchers were talking to about the psychological impact, not only of their own financial insecurity, but of simply of the necessity of having to track every penny?
Well, you know, it leads to a sense of insecurity and a sense of instability. So the Pew Charitable Trust asked this really amazing question in a national survey. They asked people, would you prefer to have greater stability or to move up the income ladder? And in a way, it's a false question, right? Because if you move up the income ladder, you'll have more stability. But what's nonetheless really shocking from a lot of people's perspective is the fact that 92% of Americans answered they wanted more stability. And we have this sort of national myth that it's all about mobility. But for a lot of people today, they're not feeling stable enough to think about being mobile. And, you know, so I think particularly about
one. You mean sort of class mobility, moving from working poor to upper middle class, something like that.
Exactly. Or even just, yes, absolutely. But also just moving upward in your own life. So I'm thinking about a woman we got to know who lived in Ohio. And she was working so hard to get an education. So this is a woman with kids at home, working full time, plus going to school on the side so she could get a better job, right? And so that to me is like, it's mobility, right? It's she wanted a better, more interesting job. And she said, but when we said, what's your main financial goal? She said, I just want to be able to pay all my bills on time and in full every month, you know, without thinking about it.
Yeah. Absolutely. So let's talk about some practical tips. How can people keep a better tab on the money that's coming in and out, a little bit more of a granular tab on it? What do you think, Cecily?
Well, I think we live in an environment where there is a ton of data. People are able to see, did I bounce a check today? What's my checking account balance? And people view that as I'm doing financial planning, I'm taking care of my finances. And that's not it at all. That's just data. That's not information. I work with a lot of people and help them make that next step of what is this data telling me? What can I do with it? Because it's really not how much money do I have. It's what can I do with the money? And so I meet with people who have all this data, have had it for years. They listen to Dave Ramsey. They listen to Warren Buffett. They watch the news. There's just so much information. They're going through analysis paralysis, so they end up not doing anything. And one of the first things I try and tell people is do something. You don't have to do all the 15 things you think you need to do. Let's pick one or two things and move forward. I'll help you make a plan and we'll take it step by step, but just do something. That's really usually the best first step is to get started.
You talk about the flood of data that people are getting from their finances. I wonder if the increasing transformation of our society into a cashless society is impacting the way that we spend money and how we track our money. Do you have a sense of that, Rachel?
I do, and I think what Cecily is saying is so true. You know, data is not enough, and it is connected to how we process information. So some of the really effective budgeters that we got to know were doing something to make their spending choices tangible, or they wanted to be able to touch and feel them. So we met one gentleman who never spent in increments of more than $20. That was just and he always spent in cash, right? This is somebody who was banked, who had the ability to have a card instead, but he wanted to be able to feel it. He wanted to be able to see how much cash he had in his wallet. We met another woman who kept an incredibly detailed spreadsheet of every single dollar she was going to earn and spend over the year. not everybody has the interest in that level of detail, right? So I think a lot of what is useful for people is to, you have to have some amount of self-awareness, like what is going to work for me, and pick a strategy that's going to work for, and I agree with Cecily, like pick the one thing you're working on, pick one strategy that will help you achieve that one goal.
Rachel, I was going to say you hit the nail on the head. When I work with people about finances, one of the first things they jump to is, hey, what are my investments doing? Like, stop. Are you maximizing your 401k plan? Are you looking at your beneficiary forms? Let's look at that stuff first. So it's really a matter of picking a strategy, giving it a chance to work, and then reevaluating it. Like Weight Watchers works, Nutrisystem works, but not if you switch from day to day. So try this strategy. If you need to be cash, then let's do cash for 6 months. See if that works. If it doesn't, right, let's find something else.
That's Cecily Welch. She is a financial advisor in Atlanta. We were also speaking with Rachel Schneider, author of the new book, The Financial Diaries, How American Families Cope in a World of Uncertainty. And Rachel Schneider will be speaking at Savannah's Armstrong Center on the morning of Thursday, October 12th. Thank you both.
Thank you for having me, Adam.
And listeners, let's hear from you on this one. What do you do to track the dollars and cents that come in and out of your life? Here's Atlanta resident Laban King on how he budgets his money.
I treat every dollar like 15 cents. And especially, I used to work in the music industry where I got paid a lot, but a little time. So I make sure to just let a dollar stretch as much as possible.
And here's Jana from Atlanta on her budget strategy.
Yeah, I don't actually rely so much on a formal budget. I just try to pay attention to the necessities first and things that don't seem like necessities last.
So listeners, how closely do you track your money? And if you track it closely, what do you do? Give us a call, leave a message, 404-500-9457, or you can tweet at OST Talk. Find us on Facebook. We're on Second Thought, and we might feature your comments on the show.